Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 18. Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, and I'm David Todd from The Hammer Speaks. Dave, this one, the Steelers opened their home season yesterday at Heinz Field against the Seattle Seahawks, 1 o'clock, a relatively easy 24-0 victory. You had predicted 31-6. I had said 31-7. So we got the general scope of the game, as expected, an easy win. Before we get into the game breakdown, let's get to the injury report. Any big news?
Well, the Roethlisberger injury is not supposed to be serious. You know, it scared everybody when he went down, of course. And, you know, you never know when Ben goes down sometimes. But, I mean, this one did look bad. I think Brock was kind of, leg whipped into him a little bit there.
This is his knee injury.
Yeah, this is the knee, of course. He missed a few plays, and, it must have not been too terribly bad. You know, or else they wouldn't have let him back in the game, and they damn sure wouldn't have let him, you know, finish it. After the game was out of hand, either that or Ben just insisted that he wasn't going to come out. But I suppose they're going to get a look at that knee today, along with Brett Kiesel as well, which Tomlin, after the game, called it a grade one PCL, injury of the knee. He left the game and did not return, although Tomlin said that he probably could have if he needed to. But basically, grade one's lowest grade, so probably more like a knee sprain is what we're talking about here. I would suspect he's probably going to get that thing looked at, and I wouldn't be surprised if he, is limited Wednesday or Thursday, and I think it's way too early to tell whether or not he'll miss the game against the Colts. But outside of that, maybe some bumps and bruises that haven't surfaced yet, although you never know with Tomlin because he it took a while for that cologne injury to come out last week. But from what I'm hearing, nothing major.
Yep, and so we'll find out. I'm sure we'll get some more details on all this stuff at his press conference tomorrow at noon, and that'll be posted, I'm sure, on Steelers Depot shortly thereafter. Dave, in terms of the game, I had a chance to go down there Sunday. Beautiful, beautiful afternoon. The same environment that you always get. I think, people are anxious to see this team play better than they did last week. Fun times for me. But let's get right into the game action. The opening drive, the Steelers have the ball on a long pass to Mike Wallace, get it down inside the Seahawks 5 and aren't able to punch it in. What are your thoughts on what's going on? Because this is something that's been an issue for the Steelers offensively for a couple of years now, and the opening drive, they couldn't punch it in there from the 1.
Well, you had Ligurski, of course, at right guard. You had Ramon Foster taking over at left guard for Chris Kimuatu, who was out with that knee injury of his. You had Gilbert starting at right tackle. They looked like a line that really kind of lacked cohesiveness. But, I mean, you're right. This is something we've seen in short yardage, especially on goal line before. They're not blowing guys off of the ball when they get down deep, in these situations. It is a little bit of concern. I think, my optimism tells me it'll clear itself up. But, they just have trouble moving those big bodies when they're stacked up on top of them there, and they don't get off low enough to move them out of there. And if somebody misses, one block, whether it even be a fullback like David Johnson or something like that, you saw yesterday, I think it was the safety there, Thomas slid through on the one there to make the tackle, and then you stack on top of it. It looked like Gilbert might have been slow getting to the outside on Atari Bigby on that sack. Like he was supposed to make a punch inside real quick and then get outside. That sack, on second and one, you're already back there, at the 8-yard line now on third and 8, and then Roethlisberger scrambles and, down at the 1, and then, I don't know. I say go ahead and get points. I know what Tomlin was doing there, though. He was trying to show his offensive line that they were going to be in control of this game by going for it right there. But Earl Thomas was the one that snuck through there on that 4th and 1, stopped him, and it really – it really had a bad taste in your mouth, you know, to work all that hard to, you know, get down there and not come away with points there, but the defense held. But yeah, there's some concern in short yardage and all like that as far as the line goes, and it needs to be fixed.
What do you think of the thought Ed Bouchette was writing today about having Redmond being the guy at the goal line? Do you think that makes a difference one way or the other? Think he's a better short yardage back, or are you fine with having Mendenhall run down there as he did in the second time they got down there and where they were able to punch it in?
I think Redmond's the better back in the situation. Mendenhall, you know, I think sometimes he doesn't trust what's ahead of him. He's not. I think Redmond always falls forward too. I think he's all. We've seen him already. I think it was last week and this week too, where the guy's gonna, you know, make bust what looks like a busted blocking assignment. You know, he's gonna get a yard or two out of it, and that's what you need here. Plus, hey, look, you know, I know Mendenhall likes the stats and all, but those are some hard yards down there. Do you really want your guy, you know, constantly having to take that beating down there? Why not save him a little bit? I know he wants the touchdown, but, you know, I think Redmond's your – they don't call him Red Zone Redmond for nothing. So I say give him a crack at it.
Well, it would be interesting to see what they do. I'm a little surprised they don't ever try to go to the edge. And I thought against Seattle that would have been a way to go a couple different times. Now, obviously, what I thought, the thing that I had a problem with on the fourth and a foot call – was let's have, and I know Ben got hurt on this type of play in the past, but I really think that's where you go quarterback sneak. You go right behind Pouncey there. He really had less than half a yard to go. So I was a little surprised with that call myself. It was a good play by Earl Thomas, as you pointed out. The defense came right back and stuffed him. And I guess we ought to talk about the fact that in the starting lineup, the two guys we had listed as probable on Friday, and we discussed this, but expected both of them to play. Both of them ended up being down, Chris Kimoatu and Bryant McFadden. And you had Gay starting.
Well, both of them were questionable now.
Yeah, questionable. Sorry, that's what I meant. Both were questionable, and Gay was down, McFadden was down, and Gay started in his place. And then, as we discussed, when they would go to the nickel formation, Gay would move inside, and Keenan Lewis would come in and play that corner. And as you mentioned, Kimoatu, he wasn't in there. Ramon Foster was in his spot. So a little bit of a different look, but right out of the chute, the Steelers had their drive. They don't score. Obviously, the big chunk picked up on the penalty, a 39-yard pass interference penalty on a throw to Mike Wallace in the end zone. Well, Wallace actually had the defender beat, had Browner beat, but Ben was probably a tad late getting the throw there, but it didn't matter. Browner basically ran Wallace over in terms of getting to the ball in the end zone, and the Steelers had that ball in the one. Seattle goes three and out, and then we see these young guys for the Steelers, these young receivers, and they're just going to play a bigger and a bigger and a bigger role as things go on. As there's a face mask penalty, all this stuff happens on the punt to Antonio Brown. The Steelers get the ball and basically go right back down the field. And the most interesting play of the group was the reverse to Emmanuel Sanders, and he throws a perfect pass to Hines Ward.
Yeah, and plus I think he had a little pressure on him too, but yeah, that was a great play. Another thing that was a little bit concerned early in that drive, I think it was that first play, you know, after they got the ball back on the punt, Roethlisberger missed a wide open Heath Miller. We're starting to see, you know, it's nothing. Let's face it, Ben had a great day passing, but can you imagine what it would have been if he would have hit some of these open receivers that he missed yesterday? You know, he just seems to be starting rough as far as his accuracy goes, especially on some wide open guys. I don't know if he's just trying to take, you know, too much off of it or put too much on it sometimes or what. But you know, that's only a minor concern. But the play called, you know, Sanders on the end around it with the option pass there, boy, that really set Seattle on their heels even more then, because, you know, after Wallace had beat them deep there, I think they kind of were of the mindset that they didn't want to get beat deep anymore, kind of playing off a little bit for the most part. And, you know, that was a key part of that drive right there, because, you know, just a few plays later is when Mendenhall took it in from 1 yard out.
Yeah, I think you're dead on Ben. I think I actually didn't think he threw the ball that well yesterday. His numbers were fine, but he was high with a lot of balls. The check downs, particularly the check downs to Redmond, to Moore, A couple other passes. He was high. One day, Antonio Brown. I don't know if that's just early season timing stuff or what it was exactly. But, yeah, I think you're right on that one.
Yeah, and I think I read this morning that he had said, you know, that's the most checkdowns that he'd had in a game. And I think from a sheer standpoint that they were trying to protect from the deep stuff and all like that. But, I mean, don't get me wrong. There's no other quarterback I'd rather have, you know, running the black and gold. But it's just a few minor things there as far as his accuracy. And of course, we saw quite a bit of it in week one against the Ravens. But, you know, no harm, no foul. They got the W. His stats could have been even better than what they were. And, you know, the key point there was coming away with the 7 after already being stopped on the first drive down the field.
Yep. And then at the end of the quarter, Seattle moved the ball a little bit. But as we saw, they didn't really get into Steeler territory until the fourth quarter. The Steelers then had their second touchdown drive, some short passes, and then the big run by Isaac Redman. Some good blocking by Ramon Foster, Hines Ward sealing off the corner, and Foster pulling and opening up the hole there. I'm sure you've seen that on tape a bunch of times. What was your read on that?
I've got a post up on it now with 11 pictures from that play, breaking down that whole play from start to end. Great play call, you know, pretty gutsy. You know, it shows you the confidence they have in the offense to run that on 2nd and 7. That's a perfect down to do something like that on. But you know, I've kind of bitched about Foster in the past about him able to, you know, on his pulling to the right. Now this wasn't. It was more like a delayed pull, so to speak. If you watch this. As he kind of slides over into the hole there, because the blocking around him develops fairly quick, though, and then he leads Redman into the hole there. What's awesome on that play is Hines Ward squaring up, you know, on Earl Thomas, who's outside there, and he just plants a helmet right in the chest of Thomas, knocks him back. Thomas still tries to fight off of it. But Ward stays on him and then, you know, pushes him into almost the hole, but right in front of, I think it's Trufant coming up in there and the linebacker as well. So when Foster gets there, he takes care of the linebacker and really shields off three players with the one block. And then Redman gets through the hole, and basically all he has to do is just break the ankles of Cam Chancellor at that point, and he just makes a nice cut back to the left and scores. But nicely drawn up play on 2nd and 7 from the 20, a big explosive play, really, really kind of started putting the clamps on Seattle at that point at 14-0.
Yep, I think that's right. I think Cam Chancellor had a couple plays in the secondary where I don't know if he had some cleat problems or he was just getting shaken out of his shoes. But, yeah, it was a nice run by Redman. And from there, you know, there's not a lot to say about this game. From there, the game was pretty much put out of hand. The defense did a very good job of containing Seattle's offense. I think the completion percentage for Jackson was probably a little higher than we might have anticipated, but he never threw the ball downfield. They're never running routes more than 15 yards down the field. Didn't take many long shots. And they really were never penetrating until the fourth quarter. And at that point, the only question mark was, were the Steelers going to get the shutout? And I think LeBeau kind of dialed up the defense a little bit more, a little more aggressively in terms of how the Steelers were going to present themselves. And they ended up, I think, with 5 sacks. And I think maybe they got them all late in the game. I can't remember one in the first half. And I just went through most of the tape. And I think, you know, they might have gotten them all in the fourth quarter even.
Yeah, they got them in the second half. And you hit the nail on the head with what they were trying to do. Short, high percentage passes is what they were doing. I have the coverage stats up. I had them up last night. For the Steelers defense and all, and that's exactly what it was. There was a lot of base early in the game on plays, you know, against the pass. A lot of 3 and 4 man rushes only. Very few blitzes. Their game plan was to make almost like they do with the good quarterbacks, you know, make them beat you, make them put the ball in tight spots, make them complete a bunch of those small. you know, underneath tight passes to the edges and all like that. They didn't use their tight end. I thought that, you know, the Steelers guarded pretty well against a tight end, that Zach Miller across the center there. But, you know, they were short tools too. Let's face it. This is a team that, you know, Ben Obomanu, you know, as far as a receiver goes, with Cindy Rice down, you know, a couple times they had Leon Washington split out outside. Their tight ends outside of Miller, who they paid a close attention to, you know, really weren't going to kill you. And they just didn't have the tools to get it done. I mean, he had a high completion percentage of, what, around 60? I've got that number here, 69%. But, you know, nothing was ever big play. The Steelers gave up no big plays on defense of 20 yards or more. I think the biggest they had might have been 17. And, you know, LeBeau didn't decide to turn the dogs loose until they knew they had them down in the third and fourth quarters, when he really started blitzing and you know, predictable passing downs. And that's when they got to Jackson and got the 5 sacks.
Yep, a really nice touchdown pass by Ben in the second half on that little move to Wallace. That was a really nicely designed play. And as you pointed out in your game notes, you know, Wallace has shown now a much more expansive and explosive arsenal. They're running those bubble screens to him. He and Ben seem to be on the same page on some of the quick hitters, getting the ball in his hands and letting him see if he can beat a guy and then be in the open field. We saw the drag route to Manny Sanders over the middle early in the game that he turned into a 30-yard gain on a 4-yard little drag. Another very good play. So good stuff from the receivers all around. Antonio Brown, 4 catches, 67 yards. Wallace with another game, over 126 yards on 8 catches. And, you know, there just are a lot of weapons for this team to go to. And, you know, they never went into that no huddle. They never seemed to be in a rush, and it didn't have to be. But a very kind of workmanlike, methodical win.
Yeah, you're exactly right. That side adjustment on that short touchdown pass, I mean, that Arians commented on that after the game, and that's something that, you know, that's just something that they see and look at each other and make the play, and they both were on the same page there. Great pass and catch. I think Wallace said after the game too, and I noted this in my notes, you know, you're not going to be able to call this guy a one-trick pony anymore, because, you know, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't with him. You know, if you play off of him trying to protect against a big play, you're usually committing a safety to that side anyway. And if he's able to, you know, with his route running, if he's able to stick his foot in the ground and Ben hits him on 6 or 7 yard, you know, crossing pattern, you know, the guy can be just as deadly there. And, you know, let's not forget about the other receivers that they have there as well. Ward, boy, what a good tiptoe catch. First thing I thought to myself when he made that catch was, boy, that dance, maybe that Dancing with the Stars was useful to him. But, I mean, it's not nothing that we haven't seen out of Hines previously. Sanders and Brown, boy, this is just a deadly bunch. And then when you throw on top of it that Jericho Cotchery was down yet again for a second week in a row, and we've sort of both called him kind of insurance right now. You know, as long as they can get some better pass protection going forward here, this is going to be an explosive offense still.
Yeah, no question. They got a ton of stuff, a ton of weapons to go to. We've talked about checking down to the backs or even using Mendenhall backfield as a receiver. Didn't see Heath Miller targeted that much. A real nice pass and catch down to the 2 that set up the Wallace touchdown. As you mentioned early in the game, Ben missed him on a throw while Ben was on the run to his left. But yeah, lots of weapons. They did virtually everything right yesterday. Sean Swisham missed a 41-yard field goal, missed it about 2 yards to the right. I can't get worked up about stuff like that. Kickers are going to miss kicks, but he's been good for the Steelers while they've had him. Sepulveda looks better than ever. And in the return game, these young guys look really, really dangerous. Antonio Brown returned one punt, set up a block by Isaac Redman on the sideline where it looked like he was going to end up getting nothing, and he ended up getting about 30 yards. Manny Sanders had a chance to return a punt, probably shouldn't have fielded inside his own 5, but he's probably back there thinking, I don't get a chance to do this very often, so I'm going to take my chances. And then the one kickoff return Brown took back, you know, it was fine. But, you know, those guys are dangerous in a lot of ways. And, you know, just you just feel like you know, hopefully the Ravens game was an aberration. And I don't think we're going to know the answer to that until the Steelers go down to Houston in 2 weeks. We would expect them to take care of business in Indianapolis like the Cleveland Browns did this weekend. Good win for them. And then we'll find out, because I do think the Texans are the real deal, both offensively and much better defensively. So we'll see what happens. But any other big takeaways here? You mentioned you talked about Steve McClendon a little bit, I saw, and a few other guys that maybe you want to highlight.
Yeah, Aaron. I thought Aaron Smith, James Harrison, and Troy Polamalu all had great games. Troy broke so quick on that one pass by Jackson. I mean, you would swear he was the one running that route there, and he just broke on it so fast. He just really went past the ball there. But that was a clean pick six right there. Let's face it, a few of those tackles, I think on one of them on the scramble by Jackson up the middle there, his closing rate was just tremendous. Yep. James Harrison looked a lot stronger yesterday. He still lacks a little bit of the explosion, but he did look stronger. I think this might have been just a conditioning thing, you know, kind of being down with that back and all. As long as he doesn't wreck it, you know, that going forward and try to overdo it and try to bring himself back on his own pace, I think he's going to be fine. Aaron Smith, you know, in week one, it looked like he was wearing concrete shoes, but he seemed to move a lot better yesterday. And Brett Kiesel was having a pretty good game as well before he exited with that knee injury. And you mentioned Steve McClendon. This is a guy that's going to be hard, you know, to make inactive going forward. And I know Tomlin likes to dress these seven defensive linemen, especially during these hot games and all. But you know, when you have your older, you know, let's face it, this defensive line is old. I mean, I know it's a running joke. I'm not using that in a derogatory statement right here. But you know, anytime you can get them off the field for a few snaps, why wouldn't you if you're not losing anything? And McClendon seems to be a guy that's you know, really taking the coaching of John Mitchell, you know, way to the next level there. He seems to get penetration real good. He was in on a sack yesterday. He always seems to be around the ball. And I thought that stuck out, along with I thought Foot played a good game yesterday. All the linebacker and crew did. You know, really, let's face it, what they were up against really wasn't a, you know, high power explosive offense. The big key was just make sure that you did not let Marshawn Lynch beat you. And that's exactly what they did. And the rest took care of itself. Ike Taylor, I think, now has been thrown at, let's see, four with Lee Evans and three yesterday, seven times, only giving up one completion. He's looking back in great form. William Gay, I thought, really played a good game yesterday.
Keenan were both more than adequate yesterday.
Yeah, Gay came off of that one rub route for a nice tackle to break up a pass there. I think he had another pass breakup in the game. And people just don't understand, you're going to be giving up receptions on that side over there because that's just the nature of the defense. They don't want to give up the explosive play. People see this completion rate, and it's deceiving sometimes. You know, as long as you're not giving up the explosive play and the touchdown, to me, that's a guy doing his job. I would say the only real bad take away from the game outside of the short yardage, you know, blocking yesterday. You know, this is the second game in a row we haven't forced a turnover, although they were there for the taking, you know, on a few of them, especially on a Troy pick. But this team needs to make sure they're making splash plays on defense, and it's something that we're going to have to do over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and the good thing is the third down efficiency much better, 8 for 15 for the Steelers, 2 for 12 for Seattle. You know, held those teams to held them to 47, yeah, just total yards. I mean, you know, Seattle just didn't do much. 164 total yards to 421 for the Steelers. That pretty much sums up this game. And, you know, it wasn't necessarily in the bag at halftime, but you felt like it was going to be tough for Seattle, as you said, to generate any kind of offense, particularly without Sidney Rice. So if Marshawn Lynch isn't beating you with some big runs, the way the Ravens really were gouging the Steelers, and they had this one in the bag, and that's pretty much how it looked. And now they get to look forward to Indianapolis. And as you said, if you know, you look 3 weeks ago and you pointed to that game on the schedule, that's a big game. Now it's should be an in the bank win. Of course, no games are, but Cleveland went in there yesterday and beat the Colts. The big news for Steeler fans is obviously the Ravens went laid an egg in Tennessee, losing to the Titans, and now the Steelers are right back where they are, 1-1 with the Titans. With the Ravens, 1-1 in the division, and they get them at home later in the season. So, you know, all the gnashing of teeth for the loss, I think it's good to, you know, it's good to have some of the gnashing of teeth, because you got to find out why you lost and how you got exposed and what you need to do better. So in that sense, some positives come out of that game. But the concern about how the Steelers stand in the division immediately goes away as the Ravens go blow it yesterday.
Yeah, and look at here. We have 4-1-1 teams. Everybody's 1-1 in the division right now. And that you know, it's going to separate itself pretty soon, I have a feeling. But, boy, if the Browns can, you know, let's face it, without Peyton Manning, this team, I mean, it's obvious. It's the most captain obvious statement. This team is nothing without Peyton Manning and what he does as far as reading these defenses and getting, you know, the right play called against the right defensive look and all. They're 10.5. I think they're 10.5 point favorites opening up right now, even on the road. So you would have to think against Kerry Collins, you really got to like your chances going into this game. You know, another thing you would want to kind of touch on this game yesterday, what was your thought on Marcus Gilbert's play and Ramon Foster's play? And then I'll give you mine.
I thought the line was adequate. You know, the touchdown, like we talked about, Foster had some nice blocks. I thought the protection wasn't great. When there are things like the sack on that first drive where, as you said, he's trying to set that inside and then he's got to be able to get back when Bigby blitzes from the safety position off the edge, that's just experience and knowing what you're doing. And you've got to see that, and you got to work with the guys you're working with, and he missed it. So, you know, things like that, obviously you don't want them to happen, but they don't raise great concern for me. I thought at the point of attack, he was pretty good. I've only gone through the tape once. I thought Foster was fine. But the line play as a whole, I would kind of grade it as a C. I don't think it was much better than that. I don't think the protection was great. So, you know, I'd like to go through it again before I think about each guy individually, but I didn't think the line play was great.
Yeah, I called it average. You know, Tomlin said Gilbert played above the line, and I thought so. I mean, let's face it, we're one game, you know, his first NFL start, we're not going to be comparing him to Willie Colon by far. He had his mistakes in the game. Luckily, it you know, didn't result in Ben getting killed. I think he can improve on that, and I think he will improve on that. Jonathan Scott still seems to struggle on that left side there, and I think in that last grade breakdown of the offensive line, I said, you know, he's going to have a good game sandwiched between, you know, a couple of not so good games, and you're just going to have to cross your fingers with him. He drops so deep sometimes that he's right in Ben's, you know, front pocket there sometimes. And let's face it, Clemens is probably, above average, probably average defensive end. But, you know, he's a cause for concern over there. And I think we mentioned this last podcast is when, you know, now that Gilbert's going to be your right tackle, you're pretty much stuck with Jonathan Scott there on the left side. So you might as well deal with it, learn to accept it. I think the Steelers are going to do the same. Ramon Foster, I thought he had a good game. I thought we might miss a little bit of the, ability to move that Kimo Atto gives, especially on those pulls to the right. But, you know, Foster pulled and did a great job on that 20-yard run by Redmond, and he also had a fairly good protection my first couple times through. Now I'm going to grade this, and it'll be out here in a day or so. Pouncey, he was moving furniture, and I thought he had a real good game. Ligurski, it's about what we learned to, you know, expect from him. Overall, I'm with you. It was probably about a C+ as far as offensive line goes. But, you know, Steelers have proven we can win with average offensive lines. And, you know, if they could just keep this unit together with no more injuries and kind of work forward from there, maybe we'll have something to work with.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. The lack of depth is an issue. You're really hoping you don't get you don't have anybody else get knocked up or dinged up. Like you said, Gilbert's first game, something to build on. Ligurski and Scott, these aren't the guys that maybe ideally you wanted to have starting at those positions at the start of the season, and they may be there all season long. What'll be interesting is when Kimo Atu comes back, if that's this week or later. If they go and decide to move Ramon Foster back into that right guard spot for Ligurski and have him be the swing guy backing up both guards in the center position, I certainly wouldn't rule that out of the realm of possibility. He was the guy who was there most of last year, and Ligurski has not been overwhelming in the first two games of the season, so that's something to watch as we move forward here.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, and it will be interesting. The bad thing right now, Kimo Atu, is, you know, if he's having to have this knee drained this early, and this is a guy that's, you know, spent most of camp on PUP, with that knee, is it going to be that we get a game out of him and then he's down for two games, get a game out of him? You know, this just early in the season with that knee is going to be a cause for concern. But, you know, I'm with you. If Kimo Atu, you know, does get back next week against the Colts, then, you know, you have to really think about putting Ramon Foster in there at right guard. I mean, let's face it, neither one of these guards are going to go to the Pro Bowl. Hell, neither one of these tackles are going to go to the Pro Bowl. Pouncey stands the best shot at making it, you know, as a center. But, you know, you're just – the thing I dread the most is just one more injury, because now we have Jamon Meredith and Chris Scott as the two guys – that ended up dressing, or not Meredith, Chris Scott dressed yesterday. But these two guys are your depth now, you know, when you go deeper here. And that's, boy, he would be, Sean Coogle would be a miracle worker if those two have to come in and, you know, you have to go forward with them.
Yep, I agree. Dave, just taking a look around the NFL, we've had some injuries in the league. We talked about week one injuries. I guess the big injury yesterday, and one that basically says this team might as well, you know, pack it up and go home, is the injury to Jamaal Charles of the Chiefs. He's been put on the IR this afternoon. They lost their best defensive player probably, and Eric Berry, their safety, last week. Is this team going to go 2-14 now?
They might be in the race for Andrew Luck about right now. And, boy, what a mess over there right now. Their only bright spot, I think, is Dwayne Bowe at this point at wide receiver, and he's been kind of an underachiever since he's, you know, come on board with him. Yeah, that was a freak injury too. Didn't he step on the yard on the first down marker and kind of just planted wrong with that nasty knee injury? But I know that's excuse me, I know that's tearing up a bunch of fantasy leagues right now. I'm glad I didn't draft him or Foster in any of my leagues.
Yep. Any other big games that jumped out to you in terms of what happened yesterday?
Well, I tell you, the Chargers had the Patriots right where they wanted them for a little bit there. It really looked like, you know, they were going to have a shot there until Tolbert, you know, decided to run backwards and drop the football. And you can't do that. Another thing they did, they went for it on fourth down deep two and failed to convert. And you just cannot do that against good teams. And, boy, the Patriots, what did Tom Brady have another? He had an off day. He only threw for 400-something yards, I think. You know, so you got to beat teams like that. And I thought Romo, I thought he showed a gutsy performance coming back from his rib problem. I thought the Raiders-Bills game was pretty entertaining. The game last night was entertaining, especially once Vic got knocked out of the game. You know, I was telling you, Matt Ryan does not lose at home, and they ended up, I don't know how Andy Reid let that one get away from him, because they sure seemed to have him, you know, outside a few turnovers there. But, yeah, there's quite a few entertaining games this week.
Yeah, and, you know, you got to think that maybe Cam Newton's the real deal, as he had another – he threw three interceptions, I think, but another awfully good offensive performance for a kid making his second start in the NFL against a good Green Bay defense.
Yeah, and I have said from the get-go, I didn't think this guy was a real deal. So he's had two decent games. Now his inexperience showed up in the second half of that game. But, you know, maybe there is something for them to work with there. And he's starting to definitely turn my head going forward here. They're going to win a couple of games this year. And then they're going to get themselves some more help. Probably, you know, there's various places on both sides of the ball they could use it. But he's going to surprise somebody, probably win a couple of games this year.
Yep. But Dave, if there's nothing else, we'll wrap things up. We've got the press conference tomorrow, and as always, Dave will have that up on SteelersDepot.com. We'll highlight the highlights from that on our Wednesday podcast. We'll hope to have one of the beat writers from the Colts to break down the Colts situation and their Very difficult 0-2 start without Peyton Manning, and news that Peyton Manning's gone to Europe to get stem cell therapy on his neck. And, of course, we'll be back with you Friday for our full breakdown of the Steelers-Colts at Lucas Oil Field Sunday night, nationally televised at 8:20. Dave, anything to close?
Yeah, I've got my feelers out to Phil Wilson of the Indianapolis Star, and I think if his schedule fits ours on Wednesday, he's going to be our guest to talk about the Colts. So make sure to tune in on that. And I've got content coming from right now on up until the next game. I'll have my offensive line report up over the next few days on Steelers Depot as well. Coverage stats are already up there. The participation charts will be up there shortly as well. And, you know, make sure to leave us a comment on the Terrible Podcast or theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow both of us on Twitter at Hammer Speaks, at Steelers Depot, or the podcast account at Terrible Podcast. And we love getting feedback, through email. We've gotten several over the last several weeks, and really, you know, makes us feel like what we're doing is worthwhile and people are hearing it.
All right. Well, that'll wrap things up. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 18.